We'll call the State and Local Government Operations and Oversight Committee. We'll start with hearing testimony on Senate File 109, Senator Olsen's bill. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Senator. Good afternoon, Senators. Senator Betzel said he was going to go easy on me because this is my first testimony before you guys, so he's going to throw a softball or two.
Mr. Chair, what I said was we make it memorable.
That is what he said. Today I have with me our Chisago County HRA EDA Director and the Mayor of Taylor's Falls, Mike Buchheit. Oh, and Chris Singh is our HRA EDA Director. And I'm before you today because of a situation. My district follows the St. Croix River, and so it's a border district. And if you cross the bridge, if you're a business, you've dropped your property taxes 50%. So it's Taylor's Falls is situated right across from St. Croix Falls, and it's almost impossible for them to have a business locate there when they just, you know, go another 100 yards and a quarter mile, and they've dropped their, like I said, they dropped their taxes 50%. I think workman's comp's about 40%. So it's they're in a very competitive situation, and that's why we're here today. And I'll turn it over to Chris Singh, our HRA guy, to kind of go into the details. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Olsen. Let me note for the record briefly that we do not have a quorum as of yet, and we'll announce when we do and can take action.
Thank you, Senator, and thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee for allowing us to come down and visit with you today and talk about some of the challenges we're facing in Chisago County and specifically in Taylor's Falls. Just to give you a little background, Chisago County is one of the fastest growing counties in the state in terms of population, residential population. By some sources, it's the fourth fastest growing county in the state. And some of the challenges that we're facing is it's not growing very fast on the commercial or industrial development side of things. In fact, if you look at our percentage market values as an overall percent, only 5% of our taxable market value is commercial and industrial in the county. And the statewide average for counties is 15%. And so we're facing some challenges right with that alone. Taylor's Falls, for example, has a commercial industrial market value of 7%, and the average commercial market value for cities statewide is 16%, so it's less than half. So our greatest burden is, our tax burden is paid by residential taxpayers, and we don't have the business tax base to spread out the burden. So when the city's faced with shortfalls or cuts or raising taxes, it's residents that pay the biggest percentage. Additionally, our labor force in Chisago County, two out of three people that live in the county work outside of the county every day. We're a bedroom community to the Minneapolis-St. Paul area. And so some of the challenges that we have is our existing businesses don't have the ability to tap into those markets for a lot of the hardware stores or grocery stores because the majority of the working residents commute outside of the county every day, and they're stopping on the way home from work to shop, and that hurts our hardware stores and our grocery stores and our local businesses and our downtown business districts. And from a tax perspective, you know, the growth that's happening on the residential side isn't always good. For every dollar that a residential property tax owner pays in taxes, they typically receive about $1.17 in services. For businesses, for every dollar a business pays in taxes, they receive about 27 cents in services. And so you can see some of the challenges that we're facing in the county. And as Senator Olsen indicated, our greatest challenges are our neighbors to the east. The state of Wisconsin is actively soliciting businesses in Chisago County and elsewhere in the state of Minnesota on a regular basis. And I've got a copy of a letter here that I'd like to hand out to you if you're interested in seeing. It's a letter from Governor Jim Doyle from Wisconsin. And it talks about how, you know, if a business were to look at moving its operations into Wisconsin, thank you, they would save 50% on property taxes and 40% on corporate income taxes and a number of other tax advantages as well. And so we're challenged in Taylor's Falls and in Chisago County from the perspective of not only are we having a hard time attracting companies to come into our county, we're having a hard time keeping the existing companies that are in our county. We've lost four businesses over the last 4 years to Wisconsin. And, you know, for example, if you look at the Osceola Industrial Park, it's just across the river from Taylor's Falls, just down a little bit. There are 21 businesses in that Osceola Industrial Park, and 17 of them are from Minnesota. So we're losing that battle. So what we're here to ask for a consideration today is to somehow level that playing field with Wisconsin so we can, first of all, keep the existing businesses that we have, and second of all, market ourselves and attract new companies to come into the county and into the city of Taylor's Falls.
Let the record show that we do now have a quorum. Thank you. And please introduce yourself for the record. And
thank you. My name is Mike Buchheit, and I'm the mayor of Taylor's Falls. And I would, first of all, like to thank you for all of your time. I know you're very busy, just like myself. And I'm actually entering my third term as mayor of Taylor's Falls. And Taylor's Falls is a city that has a population of 1,054 people. Unfortunately, we are the eighth poorest city in the state of Minnesota with a population of over 500 individuals. And as our senator and as Chris here has indicated to you, we're struggling with the city of St. Croix Falls, Wisconsin, and the entire state of Wisconsin in the fact that it's difficult for us to compete based on taxes. We have a property that actually burned down in 2001. It was probably our oldest building, the old Libri Mall, built in 1887. When it burnt down to the ground, it really left what a lot of people affectionately call the hole. Now, the hole has been for sale since 2001, and the reason the property has not been sold is because to buy the property, put a building there, the property taxes on a $1 million building would be about $50,000 a year. Now, why would I want to build a building in that location when I can go to Wisconsin? Just go up the hill. It's only 5 minutes away, and I can have that exact same building for $25,000 a year in property taxes. So that's what I have to try to compete with. Recently, December 31st of 2006, we lost our bank. So as you drive down our main street, we now have an empty building, which was a bank. And the reason why is because the bank that was located in Taylor's Falls is located in St. Croix Falls, Wisconsin. They've decided to drive up the hill 2 minutes away and have our bank in that location. Why? Property taxes. So what I'm asking for is you help us level the playing field. I'll compete. I have no problems competing with anybody. I don't take pride in the fact that we're the eighth poorest, but I refuse to lay down and say we're poor. We're going to continue to do the very best that we can do, and we're going to compete. But I need your help here. I need you to help us level that playing field so that I can compete with the state of Wisconsin. So thank you very much for your time. It's really appreciated.
thank you, Mr. Ang and Mr. Bucci. Does any senators have questions? Senator Day?
Mr. Chairman, first off, you have a wonderful community. I think it's absolutely beautiful. Is the across the river, is it just business taxes? Because now home taxes across the river probably would be less in Wisconsin, or are they higher?
Higher.
They're higher also, aren't they? That's right. That's right. They have their schools and their property tax. Okay. So their homes are higher, their businesses are less. Is that correct?
Senator Day, yes, thank you. In Wisconsin, the businesses are taxed at a lower rate, and the residential property taxes are higher than what you'd consider in Minnesota. But that works to our disadvantage because what we see happening is the businesses that were the four of them that were in Chisago County have moved across the river, but the residents still live in Minnesota and still use our services. Mm-hmm. And so we're kind of at a disadvantage from that perspective.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. While I was sitting here, I was trying to, because I know like their budget is like $6 billion less in Wisconsin than our state budget in Minnesota. And they have almost 500,000 more people than we do in Minnesota. And, you know, the way we do our school taxes are different. And so it's good to know about the business angle because I didn't know that. Thank you.
Yes, Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry I came in the middle. But have you looked into the possibility of the JobZ program and how that might affect you, and especially like if you would get somebody to rebuild in the hole?
May I? Mm-hmm. Senator Roebling, thank you for that question. JobZ is working well in Chisago County. We've done some very good things with it. We've added over 300 jobs over the past 2 years. It doesn't work well for retail, and I wouldn't suggest that we consider that. It's working very well for manufacturing and technology businesses, but what the dilemma that we're going to run into in Taylor's Falls specifically is they don't have a large budget to start from. But if we give up all of the property taxes for the 10-year period like JobZ allows, it really puts Taylor's Falls in a bind because it costs as much to replace a one-mile road in Taylor's Falls as it does in Woodbury. It costs as much to plow a one-mile road in Anoka as it does in Taylor's Falls. The dilemma is that Taylor's Falls doesn't have much of a base budget to start from, and so we really don't want to give up a lot of what we already have. We just want to try to encourage more development to come into the community and try to grow our tax base that way. Answer that.
Any other questions? Okay, it looks like you, Senator Olsen, you have some more testifiers. Is that correct?
I think they got snowed out.
Oh, okay.
So I guess what we'd be looking for is a resolution.
Senator
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
I recommend that Senate File 109 be recommended to pass. And I don't know, does it have to go somewhere else?
Tax.
Maybe referred to taxes.
Any debate on this motion? Seeing none, all in favor of the motion to recommend passage to taxes, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you, members. Bill?
Yeah, you guys were pretty easy on me. Appreciate it.
Mr. Chairman, if this was the House, we would have had all voted no on the freshman's first bill.
Thank you. Keep them in suspense.
Thank you.
Keep them in suspense.
Well, maybe we'll run back to you guys. I'll found your minutes from the last meeting, which I actually wasn't at, so I'll have to rely on you for any. Did the minutes look okay from the last meeting?
Sure.
I don't see any misspelling this time. I'll move adoption of the minutes of Monday, January 29th, 2007.
All right. All in favor of approving the minutes?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. And we'll move on to Senate File 166, Senator Kubley.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I guess I appreciate the opportunity to present Senate File 166. It's a bill that's intended to renew a partnership that has really helped small communities throughout the portions of Minnesota we come to call greater with some of their local planning and development needs, and I think that's an important piece. You know, over the years, the legislature has provided some fairly modest appropriations that regional development organizations have used to help smaller units of government. And every dollar that the state provides is usually matched by at least one local dollar and sometimes by two. So I think, you know, they're certainly doing the work that they need to do to provide some local input. But the focus of the program is on cities, can be on townships, small counties, that is, counties with small populations. And in most cases, the jurisdictions don't have full-time planning staff, and they can't afford full-time planning staff. And this program kind of keeps them on the map, and the Regional Development Commissions help them fulfill some of the tasks that are done by some of those planning staff in larger counties. But this approach does seek to address, local ideas, local initiatives. And I think, it's really the local piece that is the selling point for me on this kind of thing. But there are some folks here with me today from regional development commissions across the state, and they'll tell you about some of the work they've done in the past and what they plan to do in the future. So we'll let them go ahead.
Well, thank you. Please introduce yourself. Welcome to our committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Bob Voss. I'm the Executive Director of the East Central Regional Development Commission. Our office is in Mora. We cover the five counties in East Central Minnesota: Pine, Isani, Chisago, Kennebec, and Mille Lacs.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Craig Rubis, and I'm a commissioner from Jackson County. I'm a former chairman of the Southwest Regional Development Commission, and I still serve as our county board rep on the commission. When our region received previous grants for local government planning assistance, we worked with counties and several small communities in our region on a variety of projects. On several occasions, we used our Geographic Information System, or GIS, capabilities to help local jurisdictions complete important planning and development projects. Among the regions, one common theme in the work local governments are asking us to do is update the ordinance books and land use plans. This is work that must be done in order for smaller communities to be prepared to work on any development projects, industrial, commercial, or residential. In order to help with community development initiatives, we have assisted local units of government with grant writing for parks and trail design and construction. We have helped develop comprehensive plans which focus on economic development. Other planning tasks that have included, such as in Region 1, they've undertaken the Red River Basin natural resource planning work that was needed to be done after the 1998 floods. In Region 2, a reservation-wide land use plan for the Red Lake and Beltrami County housing plan. In Region 5, they have identified several local jurisdictions in the region who needed help with GIS mapping and development, wastewater systems, and affordable housing. Region 6E has done a great deal under this program on database and mapping needs of local units of government in conjunction with work of local ordinance and land use plans. Region 6W has also helped several communities and counties with comprehensive plans, zoning ordinances, and GIS mapping. Region 9 has also worked on local housing needs, capital improvement plans, and local comprehensive plans revisions. In every case, it is important work which needs to be done. Most of the local units of government we are helping have very limited financial resources, and most of them do not have planners on staff. Those jurisdictions that do have staff with some planning expertise typically have these people carrying out many other functions for their counties, cities, and townships. This program allows us to extend some matching resources and bring professional expertise to bear on particular planning and development needs. The work we undertake with these local units of government will help the mayors, city council members, county commissioners, or township officials decide how to accommodate growth or deal with a decline in their respective communities. Whether it is local planning or zoning ordinances, capital improvement plans, housing, or economic development, this planning work helps local officials make better decisions which conserve valuable and sometimes scarce local resources. This has been a very positive program for small communities in greater Minnesota. I hope that we can continue this work in the next year. I extend my thanks to you for the support that you have provided in the past, and I would be pleased to answer any questions you might have about the work that we do for the local units of government. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Any questions from senators?
Mr. Chairman. I wanted to echo a little bit of Senator Kubley's comments about the match. I had pulled some information just prior to coming down today, and the last year that this was funded, about 4 or 5 years ago, it was a better than 2-to-1 match. We had about $47,500 in state money that matched almost $84,000 in local money to do a number of planning projects, including GIS mapping projects. We did some transit studies, impact studies on economic effects of having technical colleges in communities, a whole lot of zoning ordinance and land use planning updates. And so it was a pretty valuable process. We don't have a full-time community development staff at the Regional Development Commission right now because there just isn't enough resources to do it anymore, but we're getting a lot of requests from local units of government asking us for that service. So that is a large reason why we're here today, to ask for the assistance of the state in helping get some of those planning initiatives done. In our region particularly, we're just on the cusp of the north edge of the Twin Cities. So, Chris Eng testified earlier under the border bill. He's absolutely right. We have a huge commuter population, and there's a lot of planning needs, especially in the southern reaches of our region that touch the metro area. So I wanted to make those comments known today also.
Well, I'd just like to insert that Mr. Voss is from my neck of the woods, and it's not only just that area right outside the cities. It's also up into the more rural areas, and we see Bob and his crew up there helping our small communities with some of their development issues, which are increasing. So I think that the work you guys do is very important to support. And so,
thank you.
Does anybody have any questions? Senator Day?
Chairman, I think it's a good bill. Also move it or move it to wherever it's got to go. Or
it's going to go to finances? To finance?
Wherever.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Senator Roebling has.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And even though it's not being called this, I would call this local government aid because it is. I mean, it's more, you're looking at it from a regional picture. But in my area, when local units of government get together to put together a project, they, you know, they each have to contribute their share. And you know, I'm looking at this thinking, well, this is a worthwhile cause. I don't disagree with that, but I don't want to not say that it's not a part of local government aid, because it very definitely is. And so we need to keep that in mind as we move through the session, where all of these little packages might be. But I'm just wondering, how many counties are in a region? And, you know, we just had this really interesting report the other day from the Legislative Audit Commission talking about problems with smaller counties in human services administration. And maybe that's something way beyond what the regional entities are doing. But they're looking at combining, or they're recommending more combinations of counties to deliver services, which is what you're working on. And I commend you for that, because I think that's very wise, considering you don't have big populations where you are. But I don't know, are you strictly planning or what else? You're delivering housing services. You're delivering some human services programs too, aren't you?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Roebling, we do have a variety of regional programs. The Area Agency on Aging, the East Central Arts Council is housed in our organization. The transportation planning function for our region is in partnership with MnDOT, is housed within the Regional Development Commission. So we do a lot of different regional level programming. And alluding to what you had mentioned earlier, we've done some combining already with our aging services. We were a standalone Area Agency on Aging. Now we're combined with Region 7W and 5 into a multi-regional 14-county model, and that seems to be working fairly well. But, you know, the geography gets pretty big, we've tried to keep that local presence as much as possible given that new structure. But it isn't always easy, but I think our staff is doing a pretty commendable job on that. So,
well, yep. Mr. Chair, and they may be, your development councils may be places we want to look to pool some of these services, because you do have members from each of your counties sitting on your boards, right?
So that's correct.
There's a lot of local participation that way, and oversight from the local units of government.
Yes, we are basically comprised of local government. Our boards are city council people, county commissioners, township officers, school district people. We have and public interest reps, as well as tribal representation on our boards as well. So it's a pretty multi-represented committee.
Thank you.
Senator Gimsey has a...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Panel, I have a question on the appropriations portion of this. I see that you would like $900,000 appropriated, and it also says in there that it will be distributed in $75,000 grants each year, which means basically 12 grants. Really, two questions. Is the need greater than that? Would be my first question. And my second question would be, would entities be able to come back the second year and apply for another $75,000?
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Gimsey, to be honest about it, part of my fear is that this figure is going to be seen as too large. So, you know, I think, even though
you know, I think there are a lot of needs in the rural parts of the state, and you may be aware of some that I'm not even aware of. But, you know, it does seem to me that that we're asking for an amount that to me seems realistic, and yet, you know, I suspect that it may not end up with this amount.
Just a follow-up. Yes, I'm still kind of hung up on this 12 potential projects. Is there some give and take? And
well, Mr. Chair and Senator Gimsey, it's not 12 potential projects. There are 9 regional development commissions in the state of Minnesota, and there are 3 areas that we would also seek to cover with some planning dollars. But it's primarily planning dollars that we're seeking. I suspect some of that will probably go into some transportation needs, for instance, which you and I both know are pretty abundant in our area of the state. You know, I think there are just a variety of things. Not every regional development commission has an identical agenda, nor do they have staff people that serve identical purposes. They tend to go with the needs that are the most pronounced in their own geographic location. I don't know if these two gentlemen would agree with that, but I think there's probably a sense in which they all have the area agencies on aging, for instance, but you know, I don't think that's necessarily true of every program that they administer.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Vickerman.
Mr. Chair, I think an important part of this, if you look on the last page, this is a matched grant. You've got to match dollar for dollar. And that could take quite a bit of match money if you're going to try to use it all. So just remember that. It's a match. It's one for one. It's not a, you know.
That's an important point. Thank you. We do have, does anybody from the audience have any testimony for or against this bill? Not. We have a motion to recommend this passed on to finance. Any further discussion?
Well, Mr. Chair, just remember this is one tool that rural Minnesota or outstate Minnesota can use to kind of help us move our community along into I think it's excellent. I like the idea. It's match for match. That makes it a lot easier for us. Rather than just throw out $900,000, you have to raise $900,000 if you want to do it.
Thank you. Senator Marty?
Mr. Chair, Senator Kubley, I like the bill, other than I wish you didn't include one of the purposes for Job Z administration, because I do have some real concerns about we're using public money to encourage tax breaks that I think may be unfair, but I do like the rest of what you're proposing to do with it. And I just wanted to make that comment because I think there's a lot of concern here about the Job Z program.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Marty, I guess my own observation is that in some parts Job Z works quite well. Other areas, it doesn't work out as well, and I don't know how to divide those out, you know, but I do think the planning dollars do help communities achieve a higher level of success in those areas as well. I understand that, you know, you don't want them used for a private purpose, but I think there's also a larger public purpose when you look at the jobs that are created and the dollars that then turn over in those local communities. So I guess I don't see them as being probably as separated as you do. I see them more as a single unit.
Okay. Any further comments or questions? All in favor of moving this on Senator Day's motion to finance?
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you.
Thank you. I will turn the gavel back over to Senator Rust.
Thank you, Senator Laurie. Appreciate that. Thank you very much for sitting in for me while I was at an eye doctor appointment. The next bill we have up is Senate File 255, Senator Worgen.
Good
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Senator Worgan, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, and I think this is the first time I've been before a committee that you've chaired. This is nice.
Well, then doubly welcome.
Thank you. Well, Madam Chair, Senate File 255 amends Minnesota Statute 16C.16 Subdivision 5, which deals with the designation of targeted businesses for the purposes of state contracts. What the bill does is simply adds veteran-owned and operated businesses to the designated businesses for targeted groups for state contracts. It's not huge in terms of numbers of businesses that would qualify for this particular venture. As a matter of fact, right now there are just over 600 veteran-owned businesses that are licensed with the state of Minnesota, and even of that number, they would not all qualify because they do not all do state contracts or anything with the state. They might be entirely separate. So it would be a fraction of that number of businesses. But the reason that I think this is a class, a group of folks that should be added into the targeted businesses section is simply because these are folks that have done something for us that has been pretty great. In many cases, these businesses have had to just simply be put on hold for a year, 2 years, or whatever when they've been called to active duty, if that's the case. And so they've seen several setbacks in some cases, and this is a way to help them get back up and running again if that be the case. And so it's, I believe, a fairly small gesture that we can do for our veterans here in Minnesota. And when you consider that we have a very noble rate of servicemen in Minnesota. We have one of the highest per capita rates of military service in Minnesota of any state in the nation. This is something we can do to encourage our veterans to stay here, to contribute to the economic well-being of the state of Minnesota, and to just reintegrate into their business and maybe give them a bump ahead. And I also want to iterate that this does not take away from other targeted businesses that are in the same designated class by any means. There is very much room for this to happen as part of this same bill. And I'll leave it at that because there are several people that would like to speak to the bill, so I will turn it over to you for testimony. And the Department of Administration is also here to help with questions if there are any.
First of all, are there questions directly for Senator Worgan? Senator Betzel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Worgan, and maybe the department can answer this. On page 1, line 21, it says that the Commissioner of Administration shall periodically designate businesses. Now, that seems to be parallel language that's on page 1, line 9, and I'm not quite sure what periodically means. Would that be once in a while, once a decade, or how often do they do that? I don't know. You said there's only 600 businesses, and I don't know if that is very clear, but maybe somebody could address that. And a second issue that I've got, you define veteran as given the meaning of Section 197.447. I don't have that definition before me, but I do have a concern that it should only include what people are currently serving, or I believe it should include honorably discharged members. If somebody was discharged with less than honorable discharge, I don't think that they should qualify for this program. But I don't have the definition, so I don't know if that's included or not.
Thank you, Senator Betzel. That's very well
Senator
taken.
Senator Worgan.
Sorry, Madam Chair. And I certainly do agree with you that it should say honorably discharged. That's a good point. And as to the periodical piece, the word in there. I could answer that, but I think this witness could answer it better from the department. So,
First of all, Mr. Bodden, do you have the definition in 197.447?
Madam Chair, I have that before me, and it does refer to a citizen who has been separated under honorable conditions from any branch of the armed forces after having served on active duty for 181 consecutive days. It also includes disability discharges.
I think your issue is dealt with.
Correct,
Senator Marty?
Madam Chair, Mr. Bodden, I wondered, though, because you're saying veteran has the meaning given it in there and also includes, you're adding the also includes, I think you would want the honorably in both places.
Madam Chair and Senator Marty, that point is well taken. I think you could add honorably on page 1, line 24, after and
Senator
the first
Senator Marty
and.
Moves that on line 24, after the first and, insert honorably.
And Madam Chair, Senator Marty, I appreciate that addition to the bill. Thank you.
Everyone's heard the motion. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Now we'll hear from your witnesses. Senator.
Thank you. Madam Chair, this witness would like to answer Senator Batzold's question about the word periodically.
All right.
Madam Chair and others, thank you for having us here today and for considering the targeted group status for the state.
You need to identify yourself for the record, please.
Kathy Newman.
Kathy, Ms. Newman.
Thanks for your warm welcome. We really appreciate you including the veterans in the targeted group program with the state of Minnesota. We think that this is really important for, in general, for integrating the folks who have left the state for the last year, year and a half, to get them integrated back into our society again very quickly, and for really building their businesses and making them healthy right away. I've invited a company here to testify, Semper Fi Security, who's recently come back. Both gentlemen are service-disabled veterans, started a small company in Minnesota, and have had issues where they haven't been able to bid on some of the state contracts because of their inability to be part of the targeted group. So I'd like to introduce, if I may.
Please.
This is Kim Brule of Semper Fi Security.
Ms. Brule, welcome to the committee, and we're happy to have your testimony.
Thank you, and good afternoon. My name is Kim Brule, and I am the Chief Financial Officer and the wife of one of the partners of Semper Fi Security. And it is I who have tackled the many tasks of formally registering and becoming a company here in Minnesota. It is a 100% service-disabled, veteran-owned small business, and we are licensed, insured, and bonded in the state of Minnesota for physical security, guard detail, security training, and executive personal protection. I was asked here today just to talk about some of the personal experiences we've endured in registering in the state of Minnesota. I'd like to share some of the following points and some of the challenges that we're still facing in the quest of success. The first thing, for those who understand the licensing processes, the lack of transference of credentials and experience from the military into civilian terms made it very difficult and made a very long process in becoming licensed. There isn't any recognized system to take what my husband and the other partner got for experiences and their qualifications and transferred over into what the state wanted for licensing and what employers or contractors want for their histories. I'm not having the ability to contact past job references. It's very difficult to find those people that they served with 20 years ago to get those personal job references. That was another challenge we had. And if it wasn't for a military pension clerk in D.C. who allowed us to send a letter to people through the pension, we would have still not been able to be licensed here in the state of Minnesota. We have contacted all the local offices that offer guidance to starting a small business. We have been forwarded to many websites, many individuals who did not have the answers to help us. Or the documents, or where to get those needed documents. During a conversation 6 months into the process, a gentleman gave a personal reference to Kathy at the Defense Alliance, who had worked in the past, and he knew had been doing a lot of advocate work on behalf of veterans. I did make the call, and the one-on-one help has been the greatest assistance that we have asked, that we could have asked for, and their knowledge and respect for the military was refreshing. It was Kathy who brought to our attention that we qualified as a service-disabled veteran-owned company and what that significance was federally. Most people in the state of Minnesota really don't understand the details of military work history, and that puts us at an economic disadvantage. We have been told by many hospitals, sports venues, and campuses that they rely on the security services of retired law enforcement officers and police officers, when in truth the military careers of my husband and the other founder of Semper Fi Security gives them far more experience in knowledge of security measures than the majority of local law enforcement officers. We're not talking about law enforcement and detention and arrest. We're talking about security measures and actual physical security. With security regulations mandated at the state levels across the nation, and as a small business, we realistically must concentrate most of our services locally. We heard through word of mouth after the fact that a $3 million contract with the city of Minneapolis for parking lot security was up for tender a few weeks ago, and we would have loved the opportunity and the experience of interviewing for such a contract, but we did not have, or we do not have, the knowledge on how to be informed about such contracts. And since we have moved so many times and we have relocated to Minnesota in the last 2 years, our family and our three children, we do not have any form of network. Even our families do not live here. We don't have a family network. We don't have an employment network. And we don't have those contacts to get in to find out where it is to go. And we've made many calls to find and get into those networks, which the Defense Alliance and Kathy has helped us in introducing us with some of the key players that would help us in our pursuit. In closing, I can only offer a suggestion based on our personal experience that a system of mentors who truly understand and respect the work of the military, along with the channels and access opportunities and clearly recognize military duties within a career, would greatly lessen our challenges administratively. It would allow us the ability to do what good veterans were trained to do, and that's focus on the job ahead, get the job done, and accomplish it with honor and integrity. Personally, if you wanted somebody guarding your back, why not trust somebody that you've trusted for at least 20 years to secure your country? I do want to extend our appreciation to the state of Minnesota and its legislator for helping veterans and their efforts in making Minnesota a veteran-friendly state. I can personally attest to the fact that veterans are a unique group. They do not seek to be a high visible group. They do not want glorified recognition. They are not ones to pat themselves on the back. It is very difficult writing the helping my husband with resumes because he says what he did speaks for itself. But they do want and need credit and respect for the service and duties that they have provided in order to transition back into civilian life and into the workforce. Other than that, that's all I have to share.
Thank you, Ms. Burleigh. It's a very moving testimony. Are there questions or comments for the witness?
Madam Chair.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Wiggin, would this only kick in on occasion when it was felt that this group was underrepresented, or is it something that would always be available? I'm just trying to figure it out as I read the language here.
Madam Chair.
Senator Wiggin.
Madam Chair, Senator Roebling, I'll have the Department of Administration come up if they would, but that plays into the periodical designation as well for Senator Betzold. This statute used to read that there was a disparity test every 5 years, but that was very cumbersome and very expensive to do in order to find out exactly what was happening with every group that's targeted here. And so what has happened is a periodic designation was put in so that we still are accessing these businesses, but we aren't doing the extensive studies that we used to always do. And also for the veterans, it doesn't have as high an implication because under federal statute, they don't have to meet the same high standard that some of the other designations do. So it all plays into that whole thing of making sure that we are using these targeted groups, but we don't have an exact percentage of some or something because that's too hard to figure out exactly what it is, and it's a very costly study to have to do very often.
Senator Wiggin, is there a representative here from the Department of Administration?
There is, Madam Chair.
That
thank
they could,
you.
Could join you, and we'll thank the witnesses.
Thank you very much, ladies.
If you'd identify yourself, please, and maybe I think Senator Wergen has given us quite a bit of detail, but if there's something more that you could add in response to Senator, I can't remember who it was that asked about the periodic. I think Senator Betzel, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Kent Allen. I'm the Director of the Materials Management Division in the Department of Administration. The Senator is correct. The language periodic is probably in the bill because it's been used historically with respect to the other targeted groups. And she started to explain a distinction that could be drawn between veterans and other targeted groups, and it's a little bit complicated, but let me try to say a little bit more about that. We do disparity studies assessing the utilization of businesses owned by minority individuals and by women. And that's because as the federal courts have looked at affirmative action type programs in purchasing, they've concluded that in order to award a preference based on the race or the gender of a business owner, you need statistically valid evidence that that group has been discriminated against in the past. And so coincidentally, the governor actually has a recommendation in his budget this year to do one of these disparity studies. The senator is correct in saying that the language used to say do it every 5 years. They're so expensive that we found we really can't convince anybody to do it every 5 years. But this year there is a request to appropriate $850,000 to do the study one more time. It's been about 10 years since that study's been done. The interesting thing, though, is that for purposes of awarding a preference to a group like veterans, you wouldn't need to pass that strict scrutiny test that's required before you award a preference based on race or gender. So my impression of how you'd expect us to administer this bill would be similarly to how we currently treat economically disadvantaged vendors and disabled vendors. Essentially, all disabled vendors who meet the state standard for disability who own small businesses are eligible. We don't do the disparity study to show past discrimination for that group, and we don't believe that we'd need to do that for veterans if you chose to add veterans to the protected groups.
Senator Betzel.
Well, Madam Chair, it sounds like, Mr. Allen, that we could strike the word periodically on line 21, if I understand what you're saying.
It's too much work. Mr. Allen.
Madam Chair, Senator Betzel, I think that would be fine. It would probably be clearer, because this isn't something that we would have to do through the process of a study. We would presumably certify eligible businesses, and they would remain eligible unless their ownership status changed.
Well, Madam Chair, I'll move that
Senator
on
Betzel.
Page 1, line 21, then we strike the word periodically.
Would you repeat that, please,
page,
Senator Betzel?
On page 1, line 21, delete the word periodically.
Senator Wergen, any comment?
Madam Chair, that's just fine. Thank you, Senator Betzel.
Senator Betzel, that's the only place where that would be, that word comes up. The new
Madam
language,
Chair,
right?
Yeah, I mean, the word periodically shows up on line 9. I don't, since that issue is really not before
this committee,
the committee at this
yeah.
time, and there's no notice that we'd be looking at that, I think we'd leave that alone. But
okay,
line 21 would be appropriate.
Senator Betzel moves that on line 121 to strike the word periodically. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. Is there any further discussion or comment? Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, Mr. Allen, didn't we once upon a time have a veterans set-aside program late 80s, early 90s or so?
Mr. Allen.
Madam Chair, Senator Marty, my history with the state procurement process doesn't go back that far. I don't know that we did. The federal government does have a service-disabled veterans preference program. I looked at a multi-state survey that the National Association of Procurement Officials does occasionally, and in their latest survey, Colorado had a preference, and that was the only state that reported a veterans preference. That survey is being redone right now, so if this is a trend that we're going to see more of, we would know that in a couple months, but I don't know it today.
Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, Mr. Allen, I just thought, at least to the metro agencies, I thought they had it at one point, but maybe I'm wrong. Anyway, if you find anything, I'd just be curious, because I was curious why it would have disappeared, if so.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just still trying to understand the full implication of how this would work. I know we have a veteran's preference for hiring, and they get extra points for veteran status. So does this, when you're purchasing, does it work something like that? So they get X number of points when they put in their bid proposal? I'm just trying to get that clarified.
Mr. Allen or Senator Wergen?
Madam Chair, I'll let Mr. Allen answer it. I probably could, but he'd probably have to add on, so we'll just do it that way.
Mr. Allen?
Madam Chair and Senator Roebling, yes, a veteran-owned business would be given a 6% preference with respect to their price. So if a non-targeted vendor bid $100 for something and a targeted vendor, a veteran or other targeted vendor, bid $106, the targeted vendor would get the award, even though they came in a little bit higher. So it's that 6% price preference that really is the change that would be made under this bill.
And Madam Chair.
In increasing the number of targeted groups. I mean, that's.
Madam Chair, yes.
And it already happens for other targeted designated groups. Senator Roebling.
And this only is for state purchases. We're not requiring this for any other government level.
Madam Chair, that's
Senator
correct,
Wergen.
Senator Roebling.
Any other questions or comments for Senator Wergen? Senator Larson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Wergen, or Mr. Allen. Can you tell me what level of oversight or accountability, not just that the veterans designated businesses would experience, but what does the department do in terms of compliance to be sure that there aren't businesses perhaps taking advantage of this program that aren't intended by the legislature?
Mr. Allen.
Madam Chair, Senator, we do have staff in the division who certify eligibility, and that's a fairly extensive review of financial records. It can include site visits and so forth. It might be less of an issue with veteran-owned businesses, but historically there have occasionally been problems with what have been referred to as front organizations, where a business is really white male owned and operated, but where somebody's wife or somebody else is sort of propped up as the purported business owner in order to qualify for this kind of preference. And we do enough investigation into the actual daily operations of a business to try to ensure that it's a legitimately eligible business.
And Madam Chair.
Senator Wergen.
Madam Chair, Senator Larson, it also has the standard of both owned and operated, not just ownership name or not just one person working on the job. It's owned and operated.
Brief follow-up, Madam Chair.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Allen, have there been cases where, well, number one, what happens if someone's found to be gaming the system, if you will? And, I mean, is it something that's prosecuted or are they just dropped from the program?
Mr. Allen.
Madam Chair, Senator Larson, hopefully we would discover that before they were initially certified as eligible. And in that case, they simply would never get this preference and they wouldn't have benefited through any sort of misrepresentation or fraudulent behavior. I'm looking at one of my colleagues in the audience. I'm not thinking of any where we have prosecuted or taken action beyond dropping someone's certification if we find that to be the case. And Dorothy Lovejoy, who is the program manager, seems to be nodding in agreement that that's her perception of what's happened.
Thank you.
Senator Roebling.
Madam Chair, thank you. I'm just struggling with this a little because I know it does add costs to the state when they make purchases, when we add any additional exceptions here. And I'm wondering if this is for any veteran. Maybe they served when they were 18 to 22, and it's been 30 years since they served, and they would still get a preference. Is that right? So they pretty much established their lives in between. And I'm just wondering if there's any age or anything that we should consider from time of service to when they would get preference. I absolutely agree that those who are actively serving now and who have just taken time out of their lives or are in the Guards or Reserves, they really are at a disadvantage. But I'm wondering if those, like the one I just mentioned, served 18 to 22 and then came back and it's 30 years later, if they still need this advantage.
Senator Worgen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Roebling, I do understand that concern. They probably would not need this advantage in the truest sense of the word, but I would reiterate that as a whole, this only applies to 600 businesses in the state of Minnesota, and not all of those businesses even do state procurement contracts. So it's a very small number, and if we would want to look at something like that, we could. But in some cases, we have, and you're right, from when my husband was in the National Guard, in the Reserve following his military service, it was a different day. But today's National Guard, because of the way our country has chosen to do our military, they are basically our front line of defense and get sent overseas repeatedly. I mean, they're doing a different type of service. So although we could look at that, I don't know that we would need to. I would think that to include all veterans makes as much sense as this statute does currently when it just says gender or race. I mean, this is a far smaller group that, regardless of when they served our country, they certainly did serve our country. They gave up something for us, and this is something we can do in return.
Madam Chair.
Yeah. Senator Roebling,
anything
further? Senator Vickerman.
Madam Chair and members, look at the big picture here. I don't want to get one veterans group fighting against another veterans group. I'm going to stay away from that as far as we can. This is just it's part of a big veterans package that we hopefully are going to pass. This is just a piece of it. Madam Chair, I looked it over. I think it's and I'll just say as a chairman, I think it's an excellent way. Just one more thing we can do for our veterans as we move along. And so I asked Senator Wergens if she would carry it, because I don't want to carry all the veterans' bills. That doesn't look right. I run that committee as we're all one committee. And members, this is just one piece of the big picture that we're going to put together. And not everybody's going to run and do this. We can tell in time, but I'll bet you there isn't that many who's going to do it.
Madam Chair.
Senator Betzel.
Well, keep in mind, and I think the point is well taken, this is not need-based or anything. I'd qualify for it. But
that causes us concern.
That's what I mean. that's why the point, you know, is there. I mean, I'd qualify for it, even though I may not need the assistance of the state to do it. But if I qualified, I think they'd, you know, under the language here, they'd have to give me a helping hand when, you know, there may be other programs. But I don't know how you differentiate. If you now have to get in a need-based, then you have to define that, and that raises other issues there too.
Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, maybe one way to look at this, it wouldn't avoid the issue of whether some are need-based or not, but at least does this cover all businesses of whatever size? In other words, if you have, supposing 20 years from now, if Ms. Brule's company just booms in business and they're a national leader and it's still two partners who run it and so on, they may not need a 6% advantage when trying to contract with the state of Minnesota. But, I mean, the small business of somebody starting out, as Senator Betzel pointed out, he would qualify for it and he may not feel a need to. But this doesn't have any limit. In other words, the commissioner shall designate. And I'm wondering if we want to at least put small business. I don't know how you define it, but you do have some set-asides that are specifically small business.
And Senator Wergen?
Madam Chair, just a couple pieces, and then Mr. Allen is going to add to that. But it certainly doesn't open it carte blanche to everyone. And that's important to note, too, Senator Betzold, is that even if you were in business, you'd have to be in business, and you'd have to be seeking a state of Minnesota contract. And as a part of that contract, you don't have carte blanche even at that point. You still have to have all things equal, and the only thing you could exceed is 6% in cost. It's not like regardless of what you bid on, so to speak, you're going to get it just because you're a veteran-owned business. There's a lot more to it than that. And it doesn't take every business of every size. There are some additional things that play along with that Mr. Allen can answer.
Mr. Allen, would you like to comment?
Certainly, Madam Chair. Senator Marty, one of the things you don't see on the page is the rest of the statute that this is being incorporated into. And the program this is being incorporated into is a program for small Minnesota-owned businesses. So the definition of small varies from one industry to another, and it tends to range from like $1 million to $10 million in revenues. But this would not include businesses that exceed those limits.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Allen, I guess I should have seen it in the title at least, even though it's not in the bill. It does talk about the small businesses. Thank you.
Is there any other discussion or comment for Senator Wergen? Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to testify either in favor or in opposition to this bill? Senator Vickerman, we had contacted your office earlier to ask if you thought this bill should be referred to your committee, and we understood that you did not need to see it. Senator Vickerman moves that Senate file 255, as amended, be recommended to pass. Is there further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails, and the bill is passed.
Madam Chair and committee members, thank you for your time.
Thank you. Very interesting topic.
Amendment, the A1 amendment.
Do we have that? Senator Pappas, we do not have it.
I thought Mr. Bodden said he had it.
No, sorry.
Madam Chair, would you like me to just explain it while it's being passed out?
Thank you, Senator Pappas.
Madam Chair, Senate File 118 involves the Capital Area Architectural and Planning Board. And what the author's amendment will do is I'm asking for a couple more legislative members to be on the board. And some of the problems that have resulted with having legislators on the CAP board is sometimes there is a conflict in that we're in session on the floor, or we're in committees when they're trying to have meetings, and they it's a very small board, and they sometimes have trouble getting a quorum. And I was on the board for many years, and I certainly was as guilty as anyone else in not being able to make their meetings and resulting in them having problems getting a quorum. So I'm asking that the legislative members be allowed to appoint a designee to attend meetings that, you know, I assume it would be, our committee administrator, a legislative assistant who could go and, you know, kind of knows what our position is on the issues that they may be voting on, or even to be there to help them establish a quorum until the legislator can arrive. So that's basically what the A1 amendment is doing.
Senator Pappas, I realize this is an author's amendment, but I have some questions about it. I would be very uneasy about a legislator designating someone other than a legislator to be his or her designee at the on the CAP board, and I do serve on the CAP board, whether by luck or whatever else, I have not missed a meeting. I would not be comfortable myself with a non-legislator acting on in the stead of a legislator in terms of the role on the committee.
Madam Chair, bring up a good suggestion, is you could make the designee another legislator.
Why?
As long as, I think the idea of getting back to the premise of the bill of having a couple more legislators serve on the CAP board, mm-hmm. it's, as Senator Day mentioned to me, rather self-serving because I want to be back on the CAP board. I was on the CAP board. Mm-hmm. There was my appointment expired, and I wasn't aware of it. I'm not quite mm-hmm. sure how we get notified of these things. And Madam Chair saw that there was an opening on the CAP board and asked the president to appoint her, which I think is fabulous because Senator Rest has a strong interest in the capital remodeling project and everything that's going on. On the other hand, the capital area is broader than the capital and includes a section of my district. And I think it's important
also includes
that you
downtown.
Have, you have the legislator whose district it's in also serve on the CAP board. And I think we need to take a stronger interest in what's going on with the capital remodeling because it's going to cost a lot of money, and we really need to be very much involved in how that comes about and very supportive of how that comes about. But there is that problem. If we add another couple of legislators, I think that may exacerbate their quorum problem that at least I was aware of they had in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So, Madam Chair, do you think that will work if we say appoint a legislative designee of some language, as Mr. Bottom might write for us?
Senator Pappas, I would feel more comfortable with that, and there are no other designees that are allowed on others. So I think it should be at the same I hadn't seen this language before, but I think it at least at the same level as the person who is being who's not able to attend.
And Madam Chair, you're getting more legislators involved then. If this bill passes or for you, mm-hmm. you have to find another legislator who's willing to be your designee.
I think that's a good obligation, quite
Madam,
frankly,
Madam
Senator
Chair.
Pappas, and at least we would know that the people who were there are representing a person with an election certificate.
Right.
Senator Vickerman?
Madam Chair, I agree with you because if you look, you give that person voting power. That scares me more than that's why I read it.
Yes.
So I think
Madam Chair, Senator Vickerman, I mean, there are certainly citizens that serve in this board. There are four appointed by the governor, three appointed by the city of St. Paul. So it'd still be a majority citizen board.
I'll point out that the
7-4.
Also the legislator from the House that is on the CAP board is Representative Holberg, so currently, and she this would extend it to the representative who resides in the Capital District, which is Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair?
Senator Betzel.
I think it's an odd precedent, we get legislators appointed to things, and if they can't show up, they can send somebody else in their stead. But if the argument is that during the legislative session we have that problem, I think it should be limited to the legislative session. Because, if a legislator is appointed to a board and just starts sending other people to represent them, I think that legislator ought to get off that board and get somebody else on. Madam Chair, you and I are on the Sesquicentennial Commission. They're going to have regular meetings during this legislative session. We just said, well, we're going to have troubles. You're going to have to meet on Fridays, and they've accommodated our schedules. But I'm having trouble with the A1 amendment, but I think that just giving carte blanche for the whole time period that at any time that the appointed member can't show up, send somebody else, even when we're not in session, really stretches it. I think it should be limited to just during the time period of the legislative session, if that's where the problem lies.
Madam Chair, I'm open to any solution we can come up with here. So,
I think you've heard the suggestions and concerns. I wonder if you would mind if we laid the bill over briefly and took up the other one, and then maybe you could come up with an amendment that accommodated both my concern, Senator Vickerman's, and Senator Betzel. Senator Roebling?
Thank you. Just one more idea is that we could ask the Speaker and the President of the Senate to appoint alternates, too. I mean, it would be another choice, and then it would be up to the first appointee, if they couldn't go, to ask the alternate to attend for them. And then you'd have some consistency anyway about which members would be going, so when they went, they wouldn't be starting from ground zero trying to learn what's going on. It's just an idea. Then people who are really interested in it could ask to be alternates.
Madam Chair, I think Senator Roebling makes an excellent point, because it's not the choice of the appointed legislator. You know, it's actually an alternate. That makes a lot more sense.
Madam Chair, then if that's the will of the committee, I think that's also an excellent idea, and I'll just work with Mr. Bodern to write that language.
Okay. Senator Pappas, so we are laying over temporarily Senate File 118, and we will take up Senate File 130. As Senator Betzold is coming to the table, I wanted to let the members know that this morning in the Tax Committee, Senator Pogemiller criticized the work of this committee in a public manner with regard to Senate File 60, which was Senator Pretner Solon's bill dealing with the pension issues in Duluth. When we received that bill and scheduled a hearing, we set the bill aside because there had been concerns raised about it. And subsequently, the State Board Investment folks and the City of Duluth and the State Auditor agreed on language that produced a better bill. Subsequent to our action, the PERA developed a concern with the bill after the bill left the committee and for whatever reason went to the Tax Committee because the chair requested it, and that will be my policy, by the way. If a chair requests a bill in another committee, it will be sent there, and they can decide whether it's appropriate. But Senator Pogemiller apparently thought that we should have anticipated the concerns of PERA. And if I had the funds, I would buy each of you a crystal ball so that after this committee acts on the best information that it has at the time and sends a bill along to another committee, that we will have anticipated every single contingency or concern that comes out of the woodwork. I, on the other hand, congratulate the committee. I thought we did a very thoughtful job on that bill, and I'm glad that the PERA took another look at it and expressed a concern with some of the language with regard to, as I understand it, clarifying the trustee relationship. So I wanted to, in case you heard about that, I wanted to let you know that I found that his criticism not well taken. And I know that some of you are on the Tax Committee, so there you have it. So crystal balls are in order for each of you. Senator Betzel, Senate File 130.
But Madam Chair, just on that last point, was there anything more specific that PERA concern had about the bill? I'm still in the dark as to what.
Apparently, that they needed some clarifying language with regard to naming the City of Duluth as a trustee,
okay.
And so they wanted an amendment, which then eventually was put on in the tax bill, but Senator Pogomiller and Tax Committee criticized us for not adding that in this committee when we were not aware of it.
Madam Chair.
But and I don't really want to have any further conversation about it. Senator Betzold, Senate File 130.
Madam Chair and members, Senate File 130 is an appropriation bill, so it'll have to go to the Finance Committee if it passes from this committee. And this basically would appropriate some money to the Legislative Coordinating Commission to oversee training functions. In recent years, and we've got a handout, by the way, for the one that was recently conducted that we can pass out to the members that was done earlier this month regarding the the hearing we had at the Humphrey Institute, One Minnesota, Our State, Our Future. And these are, we've had Horizons forums in the past where we try to bring in guest speakers on a nonpartisan or possibly a bipartisan basis so that we can discuss issues that are larger issues, trends beyond the state of Minnesota, so kind of help legislators put things into session. And in addition, we've also, there was a training session for new legislators, and we had quite a few of them elected last November, and that was done in late November and early December. There is a cost to that. I don't know if the bill as written would reflect the appropriation that is needed, but that is something that's going to have to be done by the Finance Committee anyway. I would ask for one amendment to the bill. If you look at the bottom of page 1, lines 22 to 24, it directs that the joint rules of the House of Representatives and the Senate prohibit official gathering of legislators that might conflict with the legislative forums. I don't know that we want to pass into legislation any direction as to how the House or Senate rules or the joint rules ought to be written. I think that's just something that the leaders of both bodies can simply agree
upon. Senator Betzold, would you like to strike?
I believe after the B parenthesis on line 22, strike the remainder of that sentence, strike line 23 and strike line 24, and then the C on the next page, the C parenthesis. So then the next part would become the new B. So I would so move, Madam Chair.
So Senator Betzold moves that after parens B parens on line 122, that the rest of the line be deleted, and further that lines 123 be deleted and lines 124, and that on page 2, line 1, that the parens C parens be deleted so that that paragraph becomes the B paragraph. Is there other any discussion of the amendment? Senator Gerlach?
No, not on the amendment.
Okay. All those in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted.
Madam Chair, I do have with me to Greg Hubinger and Diane Cushman from the Legislative Coordinating Commission. I think members are familiar with the programs we've had in recent years, so I don't know that we need to get you further educated on, but we're here to stand for any questions.
Okay, we invite them to share the table with you, but I think members of the committee have some comments or questions. We'll start with Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yesterday, there was a bioscience conference at the History Center, and I'm just kind of troubled by how all this happens. And when I thought, you know, this is in the purview of my committee, and it was during my committee time, so Senator Roebling came and I brought my committee to the conference, and since our committee time starts at 12:30, we had kind of a special luncheon meeting, then the conference started at 1:30. At that point, I found out that the conference was for the legislature. Well, there were very few people there beyond my committee members, and most of them who had to leave at the end of committee time at 2:30 because they had other committees. And I thought, I don't know how that happened, that the University of Minnesota and the Mayo, the partnership, put on this conference for the legislature without coordinating anything with the legislature. you know, like we've done before, where no other meetings are scheduled, where the leadership is involved, and, you know, other people, maybe Mr. Hubinger, whoever, or certainly Representative Tinglestad was involved in this. I think in the past we've done this with Senator Kelly has been involved. So it was like such a shame. And I don't know, anybody on this committee, were you aware that that bioscience conference yesterday was for you, the purpose of you? I mean, but who can, you know, can you go if your committee's meeting? And plus we had the global warming program at 4 o'clock that conflicted with it. So, I mean, I think there does need to be, I think we need to ask these groups not to have these things for us unless it's kind of coordinated through our leadership and for our schedules.
Madam Chair, I would totally agree with Senator Pappas, and because it was an interesting thing, and I went and I was sitting behind Senator Pappas. But there, the only reason I was is Julie Rosen, Senator Rosen, sent out a deal within our caucus, and so you're caught between, okay, do you go here or do you go to, you know, to the climate warming? Mm-hmm. And you're right. If somebody else would have coordinated it better somehow, we all could have did both, or...
Yeah.
Right, Madam Chair.
I don't know what to do.
Senator, that's all. Before I call on, I think, Senator Gerlach, just go around the circle here, Senator Gerlach, and then Senator Roebling. Your bill is only for one event, correct? It does not speak to other events, such as... Senator Pappas was pointing out, so that if others wanted to have either, or right now this speaks only to an event held within the first 2 weeks or the training of new legislators held within 2 months after session begins.
It doesn't say
but,
new legislators.
If we had, but the possibility of accommodating the conference that Senator Pappas mentioned, or the joint hearing, which involved almost half the legislature on climate change yesterday, would not be covered by this. And I wondered if maybe if there's some way of adding something that would have a home in the legislature for people that want to sponsor such things, or whether it should just be the prerogative of the speaker and the majority leader to encourage people not to hold committee meetings or whatever on a given day to accommodate these conferences. That's just one response I have. Senator Gerlach, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question, Senator Bitzold, on the, or maybe Mr. Hubinger can answer this, on the cost, $20,000 for a conference like that. Looks like a lot of the people invited are government people already, so I don't know if you have to pay them. There's plenty of room available in government places like the History Center. I don't know if you have to pay for those and such, but $20,000 is what would that go for? And did you work up a budget on this or a proposed budget, or how would that?
Mr. Hubinger, what was the cost of the conference that was at the Humphrey Center? I don't mean who paid for it. I mean, what was the cost?
Madam Chair and members, I'm Greg Hubinger with the Legislative Coordinating Commission. The cost for the forum that was held January 9th, the gross cost was about $24,000, and there were contributions either in kind or in cash by other groups that reduced that cost to about $13,000.
And that was paid for by?
The amount that's being paid by the legislature for the session that was done this year is being split equally by the House and the Senate and the LCC.
So it costs the Senate
about
$6,500. What about the cost of the legislator orientation 2 days? Who bore that cost and how much was it?
Madam Chair,
I'm assuming the legislature did.
Ms. Cushman may be able to answer more clearly. That those costs were being split equally between the House and the Senate because it was clearly.
No, but how much was it? What was the price tag for that?
Madam Chair, Diane Cushman with the Legislative Coordinating Commission, and Representative Tingelstad was here a moment ago. I don't have those figures. We could get that to you. There were no outside speakers at that three-day orientation. The first day was held here on campus, and then there were 2 days off-site. So I don't have the figures, but we could get those for you.
I think that would be helpful in response to Senator Gerlach's
That's okay. Madam Chair, I was just curious on what these cost and what the money goes for.
Mm-hmm. Senator Roebling?
Well, mine was just referring back to the problems of yesterday. And actually, it was almost embarrassing that we had some of the top doctors in the state from the Mayo and the U of M, their top administrators, and there were about 8 legislators there. And I think most people didn't realize it was going on, and so we really do need some way to coordinate this. Or if they realized they couldn't get away from here because of other activities, and then to have the global warming thing happening at the same time was really a conflict. So I'm wondering if somehow, maybe through this bill, we can set up something that, besides the training forums, that there is some way to coordinate training forums that may not even be sponsored by us, but in partnership with us.
Well, you know, Madam Chair, you know, I think we all understand once the session kicks off, everybody wants us individually to be places, and there'd be all kinds of organizations and forums where they would like as many legislators to show up as possible, and the deeper you go into the session, that's not always possible. There should be some opportunities early in the session to try to bring in guest speakers that avail of some opportunity, but it has to be something that has to have the agreement of all 4 caucuses, because if it's that important, it ought to. And I remember getting something on the bioscience thing, and I just had to just set it aside because I looked at my schedule. I said I can't be there. Now I'm not even sure if the 4 caucus leaders even were aware that this was something that was significant enough. Clearly, somebody did not talk to anybody in this building. You know, it's one thing for them to set it up and send notices out to 201 legislators, but something more has to happen. And it could have been, might have been a very good thing for us to go to, but then they would have cleared the decks for the schedules yesterday. We would have gone to it like that, made arrangements, had the buses and so forth. So I think that the organizers probably dropped the ball more than anything else and didn't communicate, you know, with people here. But that having been said, I think that I think the goal is still to appropriate some money so we can put on our programs. If somebody else wants to invite us and the caucus leaders decide that that's something we should be doing, I think they can work it out. But you know, we're all just the worker bees. We just show up.
It seems to me that the difference is that these what is addressed in your bill is activities that are initiated by the legislature itself rather than being invited forums. Now, I understand that the global climate change one was done by committee chairs, so that maybe was a little bit different, but this specifically deals to ones that are hosted and sponsored by the legislature and creates a legislative home for them. Mm-hmm. And I think even though the problem arises, Senator Pappas, it's it would take a different kind of approach here.
Well, Madam Chair, remember we had those Horizon programs?
Well, that's what this would be addressing.
Well, yeah. See, I think this group thought that they were continuing, because we had a bioscience one a couple years ago, I think. Mm-hmm. I thought they were continuing in that vein, mm-hmm. but.
Senator Marty?
Madam Chair, on the point of the two types, it seems that most of the people, like the university or others, when they have events that are meant for us, they either go through legislative leadership or they go through committee chairs. Yesterday's was set up by the committee chairs, but sometimes an outside group will come in to the chair, say, we'd like to make this available to your committees, and so on. And I think one of the things that might just be an awareness thing is if we as committee chairs and leadership and Legislative Coordinating Commission can at least refer, if somebody says, we'd like to have the Senate Health Committee do something, and we wonder about the House Health Committee, and this should be broader interest to others, that we just have chairs be informed and others be informed to refer them to the Legislative Coordinating Commission so they can work with leadership and just try and do it, because I think Senator Roebling and Senator Pappas are right. It's embarrassing when we have people who are doing something for the legislature. They think it's coordinated with something, and it's not. So I think in that sense, just the better awareness that if chairs and leadership and the LCC are aware of it, maybe we can help avoid some of those embarrassing things. And then I had one quick question about this bill, though.
Okay, could I just respond?
Sure.
I'm not sure that needs to be put.
It's not for the bill.
Yeah, cooperation and communication of committee chairs and leadership does not need to be put in the statutes. Okay?
Madam Chair, I was suggesting that was totally separate from the bill.
Okay, Senator Marty.
And Madam Chair, on the bill, though, have we had these? It says annually here. I thought we only did it every other year. Is that the case that we've done it annually in the past? Because I picture last year's 2-month session. I didn't know we did it in even numbered years.
Madam Chair, Senator Marty, I seem to recall, in the odd numbered years when there's less going on, we used to have them, like the first 4 or 5 weeks of the session, but I thought we had something in the second year, but maybe Mr. Hubinger can remember.
Madam Chair and members,
Hubinger?
I believe it's been several years since there has been a Horizons-type conference, and the conference this year was the first step in a kickoff, and hopefully the pattern is to provide them each year.
So this is not a biennial event. I think that's what Senator Marty is saying, but every legislative session. And you would also think that legislative training forums would be needed each year?
Well, this appropriation is only for next year. In fiscal year 2008 for legislative forums in 2008. Obviously, we don't need orientation because we're not going to have elections between now and then. Mm-hmm. Next year is a short legislative session, so we probably will not need to do too much, but to the extent that we have anything. But this is
it just allows the flexibility
to do something
to continue there even if it's not done.
Yes.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm wondering, I don't know if we're going to try and cover the training for new members within this appropriation. Is there still money available from the House and Senate to do that? I think it was an excellent program, and after I became aware of it, I was very envious of the new members who got to go through it, because I never got to go through something like that, and I thought this would have been extremely helpful. But so it isn't intended for that orientation program, because I was just looking at it because it said it had to be held within the first 2 weeks of each session or within the first 2 months of each year's legislative session, and they like to have those after the elections. But it isn't intended for that then.
No. Madam Chair and Senator Roebling, when we showed up, they just threw us in the water, you sink or swim. I mean, that's what you do. And I think that the program that was put on this year by Senator Cascade and Representative Tinglestad was an excellent one, and it's something. This one doesn't quite address that, and we don't really need to do that for a while now. Of course, the House is going to be more interested in doing something because they're up next in the 2008 elections. The Senate is not. But considering how many people ultimately come from the House over to the Senate, we probably want to make sure they get off on the right foot. So we probably want to have an interest in having them trained. So.
It's a bad idea. Don't do that.
Is there
come to the Senate?
Is there any other discussion? Senator Betzel, would you like to make a
motion? I'll move that Senate File 130, as amended, be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Finance.
Senator Betzel moves that Senate File 130, as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Finance. Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify either in favor or in opposition to this bill? Seeing none, we have the Betzel motion. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed, no. The motion prevails, and the bill is passed and referred to the Committee on Finance. Okay. Senator Pappas, are you ready?
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah.
We have the A2 amendment before us coming to Senate File 118. Senator Pampas, would you like to explain the amendment and how it meets the concerns expressed by the members?
Right, Madam Chair, the members felt that the designee or the alternative to the legislator needed to be another alternative. So during the legislative session, the appointing authority for each legislative member may appoint an alternative member to attend meetings. I did occur to me that if we're in session, that still doesn't solve the session problem because we both have to be on the floor. But it could solve the problem if we're in committees, if the alternative person is not also in committee. So it's not perfect, but I think what it does give a little more flexibility. It does involve more legislators by having alternates. So I think it gets us a little bit closer.
Okay, Mr. Bodern informs us that there are some slight changes to the amendment that he has on his copy that if members would follow along, he will tell us what they are.
Madam Chair and members, and I apologize for this. I was just trying to revise it and get the copies ready, but couldn't do that in time. So if you'll follow along on page 1, line 3 of the amendment, delete respective, and after 4, insert each. And then on page 1, line 5.
I'm sorry, would you read that again?
Page 1, line 3, delete respective, and after 4, insert each. And you'd be delete A and insert each.
Okay.
And then on page 1, line 5, delete each and insert the. I see. Okay, that's just proper grammar, I suppose.
And I'll just ask a question there. Should it be a legislator member or a legislative member? Senator Betzel?
I would think legislator is a noun.
Right.
So, and legislative would be modifying member. So legislator member would be two nouns in a row, which I don't think was proper. So.
Well, sometimes nouns are used as a substantive adjective. So I'm just wondering if that would work here or not. Are members comfortable that the term legislative as an adjective member there means the legislator?
Madam
Senator
Chair,
Roebling?
We could say for each legislator and just get rid of legislative member. Would that work? Or are we
appointed authority for
each? Madam Chair, it might help to think that we're looking at this in the context of the entire section that'll be in law, and I think it's clear enough when you say legislative member in that context that it's got to be a legislator.
Just trying to be precise. So we have the Pappas amendment, the A2 amendment, and she incorporates in it the changes that were read to us by Mr. Bodern. Is that correct?
Yes.
Before us. Any other discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Senator Pampas?
Madam Chair, I would move that Senate File 118, as amended, be recommended to pass.
Can't find my copy of the bill. Although we have not received a request from Senator Pogamiller, since we are adding members of the legislature, this bill needs to go to the Rules Committee.
Appointment, right. Yeah.
So Senator Pappas moves that Senate File 118, as amended, be recommended to pass and refer to the Committee on Rules. Senator Gerlach.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm glad we got the amendment taken care of, and that wasn't really my concern. I do have some concerns about this and kind of what we're setting up here, Senator Pappas. And so I want to ask you a little bit here. Now, my understanding from the explanation is that we have one Senate member, had been you previously, and then you explain the scenario in which Senator Rest is now serving there and ably and admirably, and that you kind of fell out of that. And okay, if this bill were to pass, if we're adding another member, if I want to be a member, I could petition Senator Pogemiller. He's the appointing authority.
Senator Metzen is.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. Senator Metzen is. And Senator Metzen would say, well, let's see, I got to put one more person on there, and there's only one person that fits what I need to do. And that would be you, Senator Pappas? Mm-hmm. I mean, we're yes. creating this?
It's a second senator. So okay, the first right. one senator could serve from anywhere.
Okay.
But I explained the rationale is that although it had been customary in the Senate for the senator who represents the Capitol to serve, it's not a requirement
right.
in law to do that.
Okay.
And
well, Madam Chair.
Senator Gerlach.
This is, I guess I'm concerned about that because we're kind of setting up a kind of a very parochial type of deal here. I mean, it is the state capital. It's not Senate District 60, whatever. And it's likewise, I mean, I have the Minnesota Zoo in my district. Should I, it affects my district, it affects my city and region greatly. Should I be an automatic member to the zoo board? I can probably come up with a lot of examples of state assets, facilities, institutions that are all over. And I don't know, but just saying that you're automatically a member of that, I don't know. I just think that it's these are state institutions.
Madam Chair. And
Senator Pappas.
Senator Gerlach, I think you raise a good point, although I do think you should be on the zoo board because it does impact your district significantly, I'm sure. It's not just that we have a capital area district. So it's not just the Capitol building, it's the neighborhood surrounding the Capitol as well that are part of this district. And that's why the mayor of St. Paul has three appointees on the CAP board, and one of them has to live in the district. So I think this is a little bit of an unusual situation. We certainly could alter it and just say to senators, you know. I mean, I think it's good to have someone who's not directly you know, like a Senator Rest or someone else from rural Minnesota even on the CAP board. I think that's a really good idea. I think in general, we just need to have more legislators on this board, especially now that we're going into such very significant changes in the Capitol District.
Well, Madam Chair?
Senator Gerlach and Senator Betzel.
I would feel much more comfortable with that. It doesn't matter to me how many senators are on that. And it sounds like it would be predetermined. I mean, Senator Metzen would take care of what needs to be done is what was customarily and traditional. But to put in statute that, you know, it has to be a particular person, regardless of what circumstances might arise in the future, I think there should be some flexibility there. And if you're okay with it, I think we should change it to just simplify this and just make it two members and expand it that way and take care on the side what you need to do if you're okay with that.
Madam Chair, what do you think?
I can speak.
Senator Betzel is going to, he's not going to speak for me, but he's going to speak first.
No. I actually, I'm thinking along the same lines as Senator Gerlach is. I mean, I've got the National Sports Center, my area, and to be honest with you, I like the idea that people from outside my area are serving on that board because it brings more attention to it. I mean, I know where it is, but I think this stands out a bit too much, and if we start doing this, and maybe people are going to say, well, I've got so-and-so in my district, therefore, you know, I want to. Customarily, we've tried to accommodate members who have something significant in their district. The Mississippi Water River Parkway Commission, usually somebody from the Lake Itasca area. You know, I mean, there's just things that we do just to accommodate people. And I think if it just expanded the membership to additional senator and the additional House member, I don't know what the House is going to do. I just have a hunch that, Senator Pappas, you'll probably be appointed to serve on the CAP board if we expand the membership. So maybe we ought to just try to avoid going there if we can avoid doing that. Just strike the language, expand the membership, and if it doesn't work out, Senator Pappas, I'm sure you know how to get another bill drafted to rectify it again. So,
Senator Pappas, I think Senator Gerlach and Senator Betzel make a a good point about not having an automatic member, although by having two members, it means that one of them can be the senator from the Capital District as well as someone else. And I would point out, too, with regard to Senator Pappas's explanation about what the Capital District is and the power that we have on the CAP board, the licensing group, and I can't remember what it is, which group it is, that operates out of Sears, on the second floor of Sears, wanted to put up a sign along Rice Street there that indicated that's where you could go and get
your driver's license.
Your driver's license. It was not an issue, a zoning issue, or anything, or a signage issue for the city of St. Paul. They had to get the approval of the CAP board before they put up any kind of sign. Regents Hospital, and I don't know if I'm pointing the right way, Regents Hospital wanted to build a new, or building a new automobile ramp, car ramp, parking ramp. And it was the testimony on that and the decision about the specifications for that came to the CAP board, not the city of St. Paul. And we have authority over that and made them do a number of changes to suit the nature of the Capital District. So it is the case that it is more than just the land on which this building and the surrounding government buildings are situated or located that the CAP board has authority over. I would hope that when, particularly with the concern for, so I hope that Senator Pappas would be amenable to the suggestion coming from Senator Betzel and Gerlach, but I think it would be a good idea for the CAP board, particularly with the new, with the renovation that is going to concentrate on the Capitol, that we, that they establish some sort of legislative advisory group, or a group of, you know, maybe five senators, five House members who are legislators that begin giving regular input to the process that's out there. We are putting in a bill for the Capitol project. It was not in the governor's budget soon, but we need to have, you know, more stakeholders, more people that know exactly what's going on. I think we got it on the State Government Finance Committee. We got an absolutely extraordinary tour of the bowels of this building. You wouldn't believe the stuff that's around here.
Madam Chair, the bonding committee is going on that tour.
It's just amazing. With the representative from the construction contract team. But we need more people knowing about that and being able to give feedback so that we create stakeholders. So I hope they'll do that. But they can do that without having a huge number of legislators added to the CAP board even for a short period of time. But certainly two more does not strain things, it would seem to me. So Senator Pappas then. Did we pass your amendment?
No, maybe Senator Gerlach wants to offer.
Was adopted.
The amendment was passed. A2 was passed.
Yeah. Okay.
Madam Chair?
Senator Gerlach?
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's very simple. If we can just keep the added flexibility, on line 14, just retain the change to two members, and then I'll move an amendment to on line 15, strike
the new language.
The new language.
Mm-hmm.
And on lines... line 16, strike the new language with the exception of two senators.
And then strike line 17.
Strike line 17, so it would be two senators,
comma,
period.
Yeah.
And that would accomplish that. It would allow for two members.
And we would leave the A2 amendment in place then.
Right.
Yes, Madam
Still
Chair.
The alternate being appointed.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Everybody understand that amendment? Mr. Bodern?
Yeah. Got
okay. So Senator Gerlach moves that the new language on line 15 be deleted, and that the language following the comma on line 16 be deleted, and that line 17 be deleted. Is there any discussion of that amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. We now have Senate file number 118 in front of us as amended. Is there further discussion?
Madam Chair, does this go where?
It goes to it will go to rules because it's adding legislative members to a group.
Well, Madam Chair, I just bring that up. Maybe there's some more concern and it can be changed.
I think probably Senator Pappas has heard the range of concerns that would be for this bill and has dealt with them, answered them pretty well. Now, further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Pappas's motion that Senate file number 118 as amended be recommended to pass and refer to the Committee on Rules, please say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails and the bill is passed. Thank you very much, Senator Pappas and members. Today is Wednesday. Next Monday. What is it? What are we doing? What are we doing? Okay. On Monday, the committee will, just for your planning, we'll be dealing with confirmations. And on Wednesday, the full committee will not meet. The elections committee will take up the full time of our committee. So just for your scheduling for next week, if you're not on the elections subcommittee, you don't have an obligation to this committee on Wednesday.
Chair, could you be sure that
Senator Vickerman.
Email goes to the office, because I come down here and I'm not supposed to be here. And
I don't.
Would you do that?
We'll make sure that you're everybody gets the meeting notices, but some people like to plan way in ahead, so we're letting you know that.
Well, Madam Chair, I'm a little bit scared of you because you told me you better be here. So,
and you've been here, and you've been an excellent member of this committee. There'd be no further business before the committee. Thank you very much. The